Good day. We continue our lectures, and lecture 3, which starts from the full system of equations of elastoplasticity. Let's again discuss all of them. The first one is the equation of motion. You remember it comes out from the relations which we have considered on the first lecture, and this equation gives you balance in terms of forces, which are inertia forces, this term, and volume forces. Sigma is the stress tensor. Then the second relation, it is because we are in the theory of small strains, so we consider only linear part of this Almanzi tensor. And then this comes these two, which we started to discuss at the end of previous lecture. These two gives you constitutive relations of elastoplastic media. The first one says that the rate of strain is decomposed into two parts. This one, which is related to the rate of stress in accordance with linear law, with Hooke's law, and presents you elastic strain. And there is one other, this lambda, which definition needs some special discussion. And this definition comes out from the assumption that we have this yield surface, F, which is in standard plasticity theory always assumed to be convex. So this relation restricts all admissible stress tensors which can be inside a media. And then, being based on this F, we define lambda by this inequality. So we say that lambda must be such that whatever trial tensor we put here, but trial tensor must also lie inside this yield surface. Whatever we take, this must be negative. And the very last item of the previous lecture was the demonstration of the fact that this relation means if your sigma is inside the yield surface, strictly inside, then from here it automatically follows then that lambda is zero, because we can take this tau from all sides, if I might say so, of sigma. But if it is not the case, if this lambda, if this sigma belongs to the yield surface where this holds as equality, then this relation means that the plastic strain is orthogonal to the yield surface. This is the Drucker-Prager. This is the Drucker yield relation. We need to say something about boundary conditions, and on this stage, let us operate only with well-known conditions like Dirichlet and Neumann conditions, which of course are quite familiar to you. I only say that in reality, in mechanics, these two types of boundary conditions are rather artificial, and it is not that easy to realize such type of conditions. Sometimes it is possible, but sometimes not. For example, this condition means that your body strictly follows some given law, some of displacement. It may happen only if your media is rather weak and what produces these displacements is much, much more stronger than the media itself. But in reality, when one body acts with another one, then this is a bilateral matter, and such type simple boundary conditions does not describe this situation. Later, if we will have time, I will show you another theory of boundary conditions, which comes out from the boundary potential principle, and which is close to the superpotential matter which we will consider today. But now, okay, let's believe that these conditions are imposed on the boundary, and of course we must also impose initial boundary conditions, which are quite standard. Which type models this system can describe? Well, for example, if you have a bullet penetrating armor, then this is the model, because there will be plastic deformations, and you must take into account inertia forces very, very considerably. But in the majority of cases, when you study plasticity, a more simple system of equations is used. It is this one, and it is called the Prandtl-Rais plasticity system, which is based on the conception of incremental load. So here, this second derivative is neglected because they believe that all loadings and unloadings of the system, they are done in incrementally small steps. So on every this small step, the changes in velocity are insignificant and we can forget about it. So the whole system is time dependent. So all parameters here depends on time. But explicitly, these derivatives, these like velocities or accelerations, they do not enter the system. Contrary to linear elasticity, which is completely reversible, this system is not reversible. And this is due to these two relations. So in this model, if you step by step increase your forces, or boundary conditions are changed step by step slowly, you come to one stress strain situation, then you can make unloading, then loading again, and the result which you will have depends on the whole prehistory. And this is due to these relations, because they depend on time and they create this lambda, which may appear or may not, depending on the way in which you make your loading and unloading. It is also necessary to say some words about viscoelasticity. Later, maybe in the fifth lecture, we will consider viscoplastic fluids, which is a very interesting object. But now I want to say several words about these models in general terms, because they are related not only to fluids, they are related to many other cases. What is viscoplasticity? What is viscosity? Viscosity is something which prevents, which creates stresses proportional or not proportional to velocities. If you have, for example, a highly viscous fluid and you want to flow through it with a high speed, you will have high reaction back. If you have a fluid with very small viscosity, that will be much easier. So in the general form, one of the viscosity relations is this one, that stress is proportional but to the rate of viscoplastic strain. This dot here is time derivative. And this nu is viscosity. And in general models, which are quite practical, this viscosity is a nonlinear function. So this viscosity is a nonlinear function of sigma and of some collection of internal parameters which describe this particular media. So this is a nonlinear relation, maybe a strongly nonlinear relation. How all this may interact? So mechanicians, they like schemes like this. I will present you only one in this class, but if you understand this, then sometimes if you read mechanical books, they even append description of a nonlinear media which they study with some picture like this. And for mechanician, when he looks at it, immediately clear what is it, what is it. So it is nice to discuss this on this example. You have 1D example, which in this case is 1D elastic, perfectly viscoplastic material. The model. You have this clamped end, you have spring, and spring with the elasticity parameter E models elasticity. And then you have these two guys. This guy, it is like a plate with friction, and on it a brick lies. So here it is a friction which operates like this. Unless this stress, this force here is sufficiently big, it simply, this part is connected rigidly with this one. But if it is, it reaches some limit, which is this one, it starts moving. And this is the model which is used to demonstrate action of viscosity. It is something like cylinder in which a viscous media. So if you quickly push it that way, then the reaction force appears. And in this 1D form, you have these relations. So let's look at them. For example, if I say that in these elements, this K star is simply infinity, what these relations will be, then this will never hold. And only this one holds, which means that here they are simply connected if K star is infinity. And you have only one acting element, the spring. Now, assume that the opposite case. Assume that K star is zero, then this never holds. This part does not work. And you have that your strain rate is the sum of elastic and viscoplastic, which will be this one compared with this formula. Yeah? Then the opposite case. Assume that viscosity is infinite. But if viscosity is infinite, it means that this cylinder is simply sitting unmovable inside. Then this factor will be zero, and again you have only one element, this spring. But then by analogy, mechanicians write such type relations in tensor form, which are said to be constitutive relations. I'm sorry, here is a misprint. Here dot should not be. Here only stress. So this is the real life constitutive relation of elastic viscoplastic media, where these epsilon and sigma, they are tensors now, and this relation describes media in terms of strain and stress rates. Very commonly used mathematical model is the so-called Norton-Hof viscosity model. It is related to this law of viscosity. This is some positive parameter, and this is also parameter, and you see that in this model, viscosity nonlinear depends on sigma, so you have, in general, a very complicated mathematical model. Now we proceed to one even more simple model, which is deformation plasticity theory, but which is a nice instrument to discuss mathematical properties of elastoplastic media. And before doing this, we need first excursion to mathematics. I apologize for those who know this subject, but not all probably know this. So I briefly make this excursion into mathematical background. And the point which I would like to discuss here is one key property related to mathematical models described by so-called variational inequalities. Variational inequalities is an interesting mathematical object that appeared in 60s and intensively studied in 60s, 70s, 80s years by Italian school, French school, American school, Russian school, many, many mathematicians studied it. And it gives you mathematical theory for variational problems which possess two important special features. They are either related to non-differentiable functionals, or they are related to functionals which are not defined, which are minimized not on the whole spaces, but on some convex subsets of these spaces. And namely, we will assume that our functional has such a structure where this guy is convex, differentiable, continuous and coercive functional. And the second one, this g small, we assume that it is only convex and continuous. And I recall this definition that we say that the functional g is Gattaudot differentiable on the element v if it possesses such a property, that if I will compute this limit, so I take this point v and I take all possible variations around this point where lambda is the real number associated with the range of this variation, and I go to limit. So if this functional is Gattaudot differentiable, then there is an element h, 1 for all this w, which serves this limit. Well, it is, in some sense, it is generalization of directional derivative, which you know in the standard calculus. So we assume that g0 possesses this property. And now we consider the problem, minimize this g over some convex set k. This is this problem. Find u in k such that minimizer is an element which realizes this exact lower bound. Just we note that due to ideas which we already used in previous lectures, I mean this lower semi-continuity principle, it is not that difficult to prove exactly by the same way that such a minimizer will exist. But the main point which I want to discuss and to prove, because we will use it later, is this lemma, which is known in the literature as Leon-Sampakie lemma. And it says you that the function u, which is a minimizer of this problem, satisfies this relation, which is called variational inequality. It, namely, this u is here, and this w is just a trial function, which will be in this set, in this k. And lemma Leon-Sampakie says that this and this, they are equivalent. So if we have u, which satisfies this relation, then this is a minimizer, and vice versa. And now I will prove it. It is not that difficult. So let us prove. Assume that u is indeed minimizer, and it realizes this lower value of the functional, so that we have this. Automatically, this means that whatever v we take, I of v will be bigger. But k is a convex set, so we can always select this v in a special form. Namely, we take some w in k, and we take some mu here, and then this convex combination of u and w will also belong to k, and we can use such type v in our relation. This is what we do. So I substitute this v here, and we have this one. The next line simply is the same, but written in an explicit form. I remembered that this guy consists of these two, and similarly on the right-hand side. Now we recall that this functional, this one, is convex. And since it is convex, the following relation holds for it. Indeed, here we have factor mu with w, and for u we have factor 1 minus mu. So automatically, due to convexity and to the fact that mu is here, we have this relation. Okay. Now I have used this relation, and my inequality came out in this form. I divide by mu, and here I have exactly this complex divided by mu, and here I have this. We tend mu to zero, and then, since G0 is Gateau differentiable, this complex equals this one, where this guy denotes this H, this Gateau derivative. And we arrived at the variational inequality. Let's prove the opposite. Assume that U is a solution of our variational inequality. So there is such an element U which meets this inequality. Then we attract convexity of the functional G0. This relation comes out of the convexity, which says you that if your function is convex, then the value, the increment of real increment of this convex function always bigger than the increment which you compute being based on the derivative or on the Gateau derivative calculated in the initial point. So we apply this one, and you see that these things, G0, it is here. So I can use this estimate and estimate this one from above. And when I do this, I have this, which means that I of u is a minimizer. So these two things are equivalent. And this fact is often used in the theory of non-linear but convex problems to create numerical methods to prove different facts about existence, about regularity, and whatever. This small remark, that if our functional G has a special form, if it is created by some bilinear form A, then the Leon-Stampakian lemma says you that this variational inequality, which is written explicitly like this, is equivalent to this variational problem. And this is somehow the problem which we will later be faced with. Now we can return, after this excursion to mathematics, we can return back to deformation theory of plasticity. And this here it is the system of these equations of deformation theory. And you see that there are no time derivatives here, no dots. So the question may arise how it could happen that that rather complicated model like Prandtl-Rais plasticity is converted to this system. Actually, this was a matter of long discussions in mechanics. In 60s years, this deformation theory of plasticity was actually debated. And finally, it was more or less accepted that these relations describe such a situation. You have an undeformed body, elastoplastic body. You have some external loads, and you start monotone loading of your system, multiplying your bodies on some real parameter. So you make proportional monotone loading of the system. And when you do only this one, it is not allowed to make loading, unloading, then this system completely is non-physical. But if you do this monotone loading, proportional loading, that at the final moment, when you stop and observe stress-strain relations, they can be described by these relations which do not contain time at all. So this is a stationary model. So from this point of view, this system can be considered as a special nonlinear elasticity model also. But mathematicians liked this formulation very much because it already contains some very interesting things, and therefore it is reasonable to go deeply into this deformation plasticity model. So we must again make some formalities. We introduce this K, this set of admissible stress tensors. These stress tensors must be subject to the yield law. We introduce the set of admissible displacements, which has this form, and W0 is a function vanishing on the Dirichlet part of the domain. You make these assumptions about external loads and introduce this set, which is the set of equilibrated stress fields. If a function lies in this set, then it means that the following relation holds. So we already have seen this integral relation before. Now we introduce the bilinear form, which is somehow associated with previous transparencies. And now this bilinear form is generated by inverse fourth order tensor. So actually, it is energy. It is the energy functional, because if I remember the law, then this is epsilon here. So it reflects some part of the energy. If original tensor L is bounded, uniformly bounded from below and from above, then it is not that difficult to prove that this inverse tensor will possess the same property, but of course constants will be different. But we need this further. And now we come to the functional, which is called the Haar-Karman variation of functional in perfect plasticity. And this theorem is the Haar-Karman variational principle. It says that if U and sigma solve the original classical problem, this CP means classical formulation of the plasticity problem, then sigma will minimize this functional on this intersection, on K intersected with Q star F. It is one of the keystones in the plasticity theory. I will prove it. So we take one of the relations, namely this decomposition decomposition of full strain. Now we are talking not about strain rates, but we are talking about strains itself. As I said, the time derivatives are neglected here. So we multiply this relation by tau minus sigma, where tau is assumed to be inside this K intersected with Q star F, and integrate over omega. Then we have this. Let us recall that the Drucker law holds. And due to this Drucker law, this thing must be non-positive. And if it is non-positive, then from here, we come here. Now we pay attention on the left-hand side of this inequality. Here we have this u, but u is an element of v0 plus u0, so it can be decomposed by a given function u0 and some w, which vanishes on the Dirichlet boundary. And since this guy is q star f, so it has divergence, square summable divergence. We can integrate here by part when I put derivatives from here to here. Oh, sorry, it is story not about this. Since this guy is here and this guy is here, then the difference, their difference is in Q star zero, so it is a field with zero divergence. Divergence of tau minus sigma is zero. Is it clear? This guy is such that its divergence is F. And this guy is such that its divergence is F. Then the difference between them has divergence zero. And I play on this fact. So if I would like to integrate, I may not integrate because this field converted with the divergence free tensor is zero. So this part goes away. Now we have this one. And now we can integrate by parts in the right-hand side, recalling that tau and sigma, they have square summable divergence. So this is what we have. The difference is zero, but on the boundary, we have this one. We apply integration by parts formula and have this. So now let's join. So this is somehow repetition of the previous line. So we join these two things and arrive at this variational inequality. But now we apply Leon-Stampacher lemma and says that this variational inequality is equivalent to the variational principle, to that variational functional generated by A. This one. So here you are. This is the result which we wanted to prove. Now some comment. This Hark-Harmon principle was used. There were many attempts to use it in numerics, in approximation, because in principle, it looks from the first glance, it looks rather simple. You have some stress field, stress tensor defined in omega, and you need to minimize it. This is a quadratic functional. It does not involve derivatives of sigma. It is just an algebraic problem. And the only one problem is here, that you minimize it not on the whole space, but on a rather strange subset. And of course, here the major difficulty is, because to create functions which sit inside this set is not that easy. Just look, you have to satisfy two conditions. One condition is that your stress tensor is equilibrated. So divergence it must be equal to the given function f. It is to satisfy this by selecting some trial functions with local supports is very complicated tasks. But even more, these functions must satisfy some point-wise restriction. They must lie inside this f of sigma equals zero. Combining these two leads to practically impossible tasks. That, of course, there were many attempts to satisfy them approximately, this and that, but this way does not look very promising. We will try to find another one. And to find it, we must consider minimax principles in plasticity theory. And again, we return to the Lagrangian, which formally looks now exactly as it was in linear elasticity. It depends on two functions, on stresses and displacements. But the minimax problem, which we impose for this Lagrangian, is now on a different set. So here we will take supremum over only such sigma which satisfy our yield condition, so which belong to this set K. And what I want to show, that Hark-Harmon variational principle, of course, if everything exists, these are words which are necessary to add here every time, because existence of one part of the solution of this one is not a trivial thing here in perfect plasticity. But now we make a consideration on a preliminary level, and I always assume that let such element exist. So theorem, this Hark-Harmon variational principle is equivalent to this minimax problem. Okay, the argumentation is similar to what we had in linear elasticity. We consider this Lagrangian. And first we note that this Lagrangian is linear, is affine, more exactly, is affine with respect to V, to the second component. And therefore, infimum with respect to this second component, it will be either minus infinity, or it will be something which is explicitly calculated. Indeed, it is easy to see that if I have sigma in this space, and I consider this Lagrangian here, then this thing being multiplied on the function which vanishes on the boundary, plus this multiplying on the same function is zero, because this sigma belongs to k star f. So I can throw away this part from the Lagrangian, and then I have this expression. And now we recall that sigma belongs to k star f, and make integration by parts here. I put now derivatives here. So here appear divergence of sigma, but also there will come a trace of sigma nu here. You see it. And we arrive to this expression. Please, I can give you, I don't know what to comment, because everything is written. You just need to look at and see that indeed we have we obtain this functional I star of sigma. Is it clear? Okay. So we have this situation that this infimum is either minus infinity or it is minus this I star of sigma. And therefore, supremum infimum of this functional is supremum of this one. And if I change minus, I will arrive to minimization problem. Taking supremum of a minus functional is exactly the same as saying that I minimize inverse functional. Yeah? So we arrive at the Hare-Karman variational principle. But now we remember that there is a dual counterpart to this problem. And now our goal is to construct another variational problem, which will be now in terms of displacements, which will be dual to this Hare-Karman variational principle. And maybe our hope that this principle will be preferable for the analysis for numerics, for quantitative approximations, this and that. But we will do this after a short break, 10 minutes.